Hi, and welcome back to another one of my podcasts. I've mentioned, I know, several times in the past that although a certain Mr. Edison may have invented the phonograph, his taste in music was appalling, plus the older he got, the more deaf he became. And thus he signed up lots of reasonable but not particularly exciting singers, and then left some of the best singers, because their voices didn't appeal to him, unpublished. However, those unpublished matrices remained in the vaults of his old factory in New Jersey and now are actually appearing here and there on different CDs and so forth. Here's a wonderful recording from a lost opera, not lost exactly, but neglected opera by Mascagni called Iris. I've heard one or two of the other arias from this opera and I wish somebody would produce it. This one is going to be sung by the great soprano Adelina Agostinelli, who never really recorded for the major companies in any great amount at any rate, and you can hardly hear her on record anymore. So it's a delight to hear her, and in very good sound too, singing this aria from Iris. Adelina Agostinelli was born in Bergamo in 1882 and died in 1954 in Argentina, Buenos Aires to be precise. She made her debut in Fedora and she sang at La Scala with Battistini and, well, all sorts of major singers. She went to South America, Russia, Spain, England, and of course her native Italy. Great singer, one of those sopranos who could attack both dramatic roles and coloratura roles. She was just a really top class singer. So here she is, recorded in London in June 1912, singing the aria Ho fatto un triste sogno, from Iris by Mascagni.
Oh.
Adelina Agostinelli. Well, now, from the sublime to the, well, what shall we say? Harry Lippmann, which is probably a Jewish name, was born in Stamford Hill in London in 1900, and he lived 71 years, died in 1971. In between, he changed his performing name, at least, to Harry Roy, and became one of the most popular and successful leaders of a British dance band that there was. British dance bands weren't just jazz bands, they had to entertain, so there was a large wodge of comedy in all their stage shows. Harry wrote this song in 1931. It's been covered by many, many people ever since. It's just a song about a little furry animal that we like to have as pets, and it's therefore called My Girl's Pussy. Now, for some unknown reason, this title and the words have been misinterpreted by all sorts of people ever since. I can't understand why. Needless to say, here is the original recording way back from 1931 of Harry Roy and his Ragamuffins. I don't know whether he was yet calling his band the Ragamuffins, but he certainly was later. Singing, as I say, the original version of My Girl's Pussy.
I get it's my girl's pussy. Seldom plays and never purrs, and I love the thoughts it stirs, but I don't mind because it's hers. It's my girl's pussy. Often it goes out at night, returns at break of dawn. No matter what the weather's like, it's always nice and warm. It's never dirty, always clean, in giving thrills, never mean. But it's the best I've ever seen, is my girl's pussy.
Goes out at night and returns at break of dawn, no matter what the weather's like, it's always dry and warm.
I bring tidbits that it loves, we still like to turtle doves. I take care to remove my gloves when smoking my girl's pussy.
Well, there you are. Not so much a dance band, more of a trio, actually. I get the impression that they did that for their own amusement, and then somebody put it out. I don't know. I could be wrong about that. Well, now, as usual, let's do something very different. This is a solo pianist. I have played a track of him before, and his name, of course, is George Gershwin. Born New York, 26th of September, 1898. Died in Hollywood, 11th of July, 1937. Much, much too early. There was a program I was watching some time ago on television about him. I was actually surprised at the number of songs that he wrote which aren't classics. We all know the ones that are, but he actually wrote quite a few songs that I wouldn't certainly put my name to in terms of melody. But there you are, I don't care, I'm brave, I will say what I think. He's a fascinating pianist because he isn't really what we would call a jazz pianist. He plays in much too relentless a way, and his improvisations owe as much to classical music as they do to the world of jazz. Nevertheless, he really is quite remarkable in the way he plays, quite unique. Nobody else really plays like him. Apart from, I suppose, some of what they used to call novelty pianists of the 20s, but there's something which is of more value than a lot of that stuff that you normally hear. Well, without more ado, let's hear his version of his own song, which is called That Certain Feeling. It comes from one of his musicals called Tiptoes. It was recorded while he was away in London on the 6th of July, 1926, so just after the microphone came into the studio for the Columbia label, and, well, here it is. George Gershwin. Now let's return to some of those unpublished recordings made by Thomas Edison. Marie Delnat was a French contralto, a real contralto, not a mezzo, the full works. Wonderful voice. And she was born in 1875 and died still quite young in 1932. People really did die much younger in those days. Her real name was Marie Ledan. And from what I can see, Delna is really an anagram of her real name, with just maybe one letter missing. She was a pupil of Rosine Laborde, and she made her debut at the Opéra Comique in 1892. And she had a wonderful career, creating several roles, including Charlotte in the first Paris performance of Massenet's Werther in 1893. She really had a superb voice, and so it's surprising that she wasn't recorded by the major record labels. Maybe because she decided that she would retire in 1903. Although this really wasn't a retirement, because she was back singing 3 or 4 years later. Maybe the marriage was a bit boring. Who knows what the reason was. But she did record for Pathé. And then, of course, these recordings made for Edison. Both companies which used the now defunct vertical groove method that has only in recent years been revived as the second track on a stereo LP. But most 78 machines will not play these records. This may well explain why she isn't perhaps better remembered than she is. Also, although I have several of her Pates, just by chance every copy I seem to get of her looks okay, but something goes wrong with it technically and the needle skates across the surface or it repeats or something else goes wrong. So again, I was very happy to at last get a proper recording of her wonderful voice in great sound as this unpublished Edison provides. She's singing here not one of the famous arias from Samson and Dalila, but in fact the great contralto aria made famous later by Kathleen Ferrier, Che farò. And here she is doing it in wonderful, rich voice. Well, you can't get a lot better than this, really. Fine, fine contralto. Everybody talks about tenors and then sopranos, but the lower voices often provide just as much, if not more, pleasure. And this is a great example of just that. Marie Delnar.
Thank you.
the wonderful voice of Marie Delnar, recorded by Edison on the 19th of March 1910, and yet strangely never published. Well, now, during the course of today's podcast, I've mentioned twice about people not really being jazz, Harry Roy and even George Gershwin. Well, I'm now going to play you something which definitely was jazz. In fact, in the 30s, this was a new sort of jazz to their ears, something that they called swing. William Henry Webb, often known as Chick Webb, was born, we think, in February of 1905 and died in June 1939, a short life. And the reason being that when he was a young lad, he developed tuberculosis of the spine, which left him very short of stature and with a twisted spine. Unlike Richard III, however, he was very loved by everybody. And when, as a child, the doctor said that learning to play an instrument might loosen up his bones, as it were, he decided to learn the drums. At first, as a lad, he just earned some money, as so many kids did, just selling newspapers. But that money was used to buy a set of drums, and off he went. By the time he was 17, he moved to New York City, and very soon was leading his own band in Harlem, a band that went on to be the most popular at the Savoy Ballroom, and was judged the greatest of all bands by the dancers, because in those days, jazz was judged by dancers most of the time. To give you an idea how good a drummer he was, no less a person than Buddy Rich cited Chick Webb as being one of his major influences. And often people who are the great drummers of today say it all started with Chick Webb. He drove his band on to such success that he outswung, well, even Count Basie, and that wasn't easy. Perhaps the only band that was able to oust him was that of Duke Ellington, and that's because of his sophisticated arrangements, no doubt. Towards the end of his short career, the pain that he was suffering due to his tuberculosis of the spine increased, but he wouldn't give up touring because he didn't want to put his band out of work during the Great Depression, which was going on. So he was loved because everybody realized what he was doing for them. Of course, these days, what we remember him most for was the so-called adoption. He didn't actually adopt, I don't think, a young girl who wanted to be a singer. And of course, I'm talking about Ella Fitzgerald. When Chick Webb died after an operation to try and alleviate his spinal problems, it was Ella herself who was voted leader of the band, at least nominally. And the band went on for another 3 years before, well, she wanted to follow her solo career, but I suspect that the main thing which broke it up was the fact that men in the band were being called up to fight in World War II. It certainly didn't help anyway. Well, we're going to hear a typical example of what the band could do. This is called Wacky Dust. I assume that the title was some sort of sideways referral to cocaine or something of the sort, because there were a lot of drug-named songs back then in the 30s. This is one of the great black bands. Due to U.S. racialism, the 20s and 30s was a time when white and black jazz really developed somewhat separately. You can usually tell which color the band is, and only after World War II were they able openly to play together much more, and the two strains of jazz came together again. If I had to choose one form of jazz that I like the most, it would be the big black bands of the 30s. I think it's just wonderful. And right up there with the royalty of jazz at that time was Chick Webb. Here he is then with Ella Fitzgerald, Wacky Dust, recorded less than a year before he died on the 17th of August, 1938.
he does. It's from a hot cornet. It gives your feet a feeling so breezy, and oh, it's so easy to get. They call it wacky dust. It brings a dancing jazz. And when it starts, then only a sapple refuse to Big Apple or Shag. Though I don't know just why it gets you so high, putting a buzz in your heart. You do a marathon, you wanna go on, kicking the ceiling apart. They call it wacky dust. It's something you can't trust. And in the end, the rhythm will stop. When it does, then you'll drop from happy wacky dust.
You are Chick Webb with The Very Young. Wasn't quite the Ella Fitzgerald that we got to know and love later on, but already a great talent. Ella Fitzgerald back in the late 30s. Well, if I speak of US racialism, I'm sure there's some in the UK too, but nowhere near to the same extent. We didn't have a large black population here before the war. But they welcomed the wonderful Paul Robeson with open arms, and he enjoyed a love affair with the British people. We weren't scared of his left-wing politics, and the fact that he was black was no big deal. And that's why he had his main success here in Europe rather than in his own homeland. To prove the point, he made most of his films in the UK, including one called Big Fella. Before I put you on this track, I should explain that I've made this particular podcast under great duress. I've got trouble with my external hard drive, which means that I cannot access the vast majority of my MP3s. However, this one is around on my main computer, so I thought I'd give you the recording that Paul Robeson made on the 3rd of May, 1937, here in London, from his film Big Fella, and it's called Lazin'. Well, you can't go wrong with Paul Robeson. Here it is.
Loading begun, can wait till the makes a town hum and rouses you from your lazy. Calling to you to wake up and do your share.
The incomparable Paul Robeson, and also, as you will know if you've listened to my past podcasts, the first artist I ever heard live in concert when I was less than 10 years old, I was already a big fan. Well, I've been influenced by many, many of the people I play you, not least Paul Robeson. And my last track, which will be of me, well, I hope you'll see the influence. Before I do so, as usual, my customary request for you to email, Facebook, send pigeons with messages, ring up your friends, any way you've got of telling them to listen to my podcast. If you've enjoyed this at all, and several of you I know have, please feel free to make a request for a record. If I've got it, I'm happy to play it. Somebody on this program had requested a Harry Roy track, which I didn't have, but I got as near as I could. But as I say, spread the word, because only that way will people be able to listen to these wonderful 78s that I have on my shelves. Well, as I say, I'm influenced by all of these people, not least Paul Robeson. I actually sing in his range, although you'd never guess it. I don't have that richness that he had. But I had in mind his voice at the back of my mind when I wrote the following song for a musical which I finished writing last year. And this also brings into play the name George Gershwin, for what I've done is pretty much written the sequel to Porgy and Bess. The character here is a rather nasty piece of work who is one of those Bible-thumping hellfire preachers. But I had in mind a voice like Paul Robeson's when I wrote it. I can't, as I say, claim to sound much like the great Paul Robeson myself, but I've done my best. Here is the song then. It's a sort of creed by this man called the Reverend Crow, and it's called Follow Me. Let's hope that one of these days you'll hear this sung on stage by a singer much more suited to the music than I am myself. Until the next time then, when hopefully my hard disk will be available for me to access many more of my MP3 recordings, taken from real 78s on my shelves, mind you. Until the next time, as I say, au revoir.
Sinners, better listen what I say. Sinners, I'm the man who knows the way. Follow me, follow me. Sinners, now repent or seal your fate. Sinners, y'all cry out, but it's too late. Follow me, follow me. My name is Crow. I seek all the pimps and whores. I take my rod and beat them right out of doors. It doesn't matter no how where you try to hide, you know damn well I'm gonna find you. Woe betide, I will keep my God alive. My name is Crow. All sinners I'll send to hell, where they can serve their master, old Satan, well. You deal with filth and vermin, boy, and down you go. Black horse is gonna come and drag you down below. Keep my God alive. blaspheming and a scheming how to break all of the Lord's commands. So prepare for Armageddon, boy, 'cause that's where you is heading when the Lord raises his hands. My name is Crow. I know all your gambling ways. You rot like dogs, you'll soon set your soul ablaze. You cheat and whore and laugh and then call me a liar. The Lord will come and purify your soul with fire. Will keep my God alive. Sinners, better listen what I say. Sinners, or you'll all be dragged away. Sinners, gonna give you one last chance. Sinners, you can join the devil's dance. Oh, for